Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We are in the middle of a youth mental health crisis in America. This is the defining public health challenge of our time, and there is mounting evidence that social media has become an important contributor to the pain and struggles that many of our young people are facing. The question that everyone has right now is, does social media negatively impact mental health, and what can be done about it? Research published in Pediatrics Open Science, led by Jeff Temple, PhD, professor and associate dean for clinical research at UT Health Houston School of Behavioral Health Sciences, finds that teenagers who spend more than 6 hours a day on social media were twice as likely to experience symptoms of anxiety and three times as likely to report suicidal ideation than those who spent less than an hour on social media each day. Jeff Temple joins us now to tell us more. And Jeff Temple, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, David, and nice being on a San Antonio audience. I'm a proud Roadrunner alumni.
Fantastic. Well, I guess what do they call, there's like some sort of raise your wings up thing that they do.
Fear the beak, I think.
Okay. So your study found that teenagers who use social media for at least 6 hours a day were twice as likely to experience anxiety symptoms and three times to report suicidal thoughts. 6 hours a day, that seems like a lot. Is that normal for people to spend that much time doing that?
It is a lot, and it is somewhat normal. In our sample, and this has been replicated in nationwide samples, about 17% used social media 6 or more hours a day. But even when we take it down to at least 3 hours, over half, 55%, use social media 3 or more hours per day.
The question you have is, are teens who are having a mental health crisis, are they attracted to social media, or is social media causing the mental health issues?
Yeah, and that really is the million-dollar question. And so because our study showed an association and not causation, there's very plausible pathways in both directions. It could be that social media, using it, leads to distress by like social comparison, cyberbullying, disrupted sleep, displacement of other activities that we know are healthy, like exercise and in-person relationships, and constantly just evaluating yourself to other people. But it could also be that people who are distressed use social media more. So a person who's lonely, anxious, or depressed may retreat online, scroll more, just use social media as a distraction. But really, it's probably not even as simple as one or the other. In many cases, it's likely a feedback loop.
Right. So if you get into a negative stream of looking at things on social media, your algorithm is going to start feeding you more of that as well, because there's positive things on social media as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And maybe even worse than that is if you're on it more, you're potentially more distressed, and then the more distressed you are, the more likely you're to be on it more, and then that algorithm feeds that to you, and the cycle replenishes.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have a question about teens, social media, and their mental health, we'd love to hear your thoughts and questions. What are your observations? How do you use social media? How do you feel it impacting you? 833-877-8255. Social media is a really broad term. There's Facebook, and then there's also Instagram and Snapchat, and they have a different kind of audience and different kind of vibe. Does it matter what kind of social media you're on?
It does. And I think that brings us to another really important point. I'm less concerned about the number of hours someone is on social media, especially if they're doing some of those pro-social activities, spending time with folks in person, exercising, getting enough sleep. I'm less concerned about the hours. I'm also less concerned if they're using it to connect with folks, to communicate with, relatives, to, even play games to distract yourself. But I'm more concerned with that sort of mindless TikTok that is constant scrolling, that is algorithm fed. I think that's where we get a little bit more dangerous, into the danger zone. But I do also want to just take an opportunity to say that I don't think that smartphones and social media are the boogeyman that a lot of people like me say they are. In COVID times, it was actually a literal lifesaver. A lot of old people like myself were trying to throw stupid Zoom parties and not really knowing how to use it. But young kids, they were able to communicate and have relationships much like they did before COVID. It does have a purpose. It does can be positive, and if it's used appropriately.
But we've looked at the timeline, and we see the birth of the social media craze or phase that we're in now, and the increase in teenagers' mental health issues, and they seem like those curves follow each other. So does that tell us anything?
Yeah, it's impossible to disassociate those two things. It does seem right at the advent of smartphones and social media that we started to see some of that mental health crises. Now, a couple points on that. One thing we are seeing less of is teen pregnancy and unsafe sex and drinking and drug use and drinking and driving. So there is some positive effects at that same time we're seeing increases in anxiety and suicidal ideation. But the other point that's really important is at the same time that social media and smartphones started to arrive and become ubiquitous, we also saw sociopolitical strife, climate disasters, school shootings increasing. So a lot of other very anxiety, and COVID for one, a lot of very other anxiety provoking things that came alongside smartphones. So while I think smartphones and social media deserve some of the blame, they certainly don't deserve it all.
Well, I don't have a lot of experience on social media. I can't stand it. I don't know what they're looking at. I just know that there are little like dance videos, people doing dance moves together. I do see some videos of people like helping each other and feeding the homeless. And those are the types of things that are on my doom scroll. What's actually in these videos or these on the social media content that is troubling?
The troubling part I'll get to in a second, but what's in them is essentially anything and everything. And, I've been a victim of it myself, where I start to get on a video scroll and see one funny video after another. And when I get like that, my friends get really annoyed because I end up texting them all of these funny videos, and they probably just want to work or do whatever they're doing. And then they'll do it to me as well. So
that's your job, though.
That's right. That's at least what I tell them. So it's addicting, and it's purposefully addicting. I mean, they use the social media companies smartly, cleverly use the same tactics that like slot machines use, this idea of intermittent reinforcement. And, our dopamine goes up a little bit when we see a good video, and then we scroll on a couple boring videos, and then a good video, and then three boring ones and a good one. And so what's troubling is maybe less the content. I mean, there's certainly bad content on there as well, but I think a lot of it is benign and harmless. What's troubling is not that the videos are watching it is making them do something or making them necessarily sad or depressed. It's just spending all of that time looking at those videos or the content as opposed to doing things that we know are healthy, like sleeping and eating right and exercising and hanging out with friends.
So I hear a lot about their body image and comparing yourself to the things that you see on social media, and that could be the problem. But you're saying that's not necessarily it. It's just kind of like blinking twice and realize you just wasted 6 hours watching dumb videos.
It's both, to be quite honest. Especially what we're seeing with boys as well, but girls and young women is a lot of that body shaming and social comparison. And so that is certainly playing a part. But it's also the amount of time, and it's less the, you know, quantifying the time and more what it's taking away from you doing that other, you know, pro-social behavior.
Can we just take away phones from people or set some limits on how long they can be on social media?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we have agency, and that's what I have done with my own social media habits. Is I've gotten rid of basically all of them, and I purposefully do not go to them. And I noticed my mental health was declining when I watched the news every day, and I did the same thing with that. Is of course not this station, but I would take a vacation from the news and watch less of it. And so, you know, I think it's important. And we have that personal responsibility to do, but I also think it's important for social media to regulate some of what they put out and how they put it out.
Right, but you're dealing with teenagers. Can you, you know, is that reasonable to tell them you can only spend an hour on social media, or they'd be social outcasts?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And, you know, there's people in my network that won't let their kid have a phone until high school. And, you know, I think you're right on that sense, sort of that outcast person, tag that they get. But, you know, as parents, I think there's a way to do it. I think it's having conversations and not doing it cold turkey.
All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about your findings. What ages are we talking about? What can parents do? What are some warning signs that a teen is having a mental health crisis because of social media? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A study from UT Health Houston reveals that young people who spend 6 or more hours a day on social media face much higher rates of anxiety and suicidal thoughts. We're joined by the author of the study, Jeff R. Temple, PhD, professor, licensed psychologist, associate dean for clinical research at the School of Behavioral Health Sciences at UT Health Houston. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I feel foolish. I didn't catch your guest name.
Jeff Temple.
Jeff Temple. Okay. Well, sir, when was the change, do you think? When Facebook first started, it was exclusively for college students. I was employed at a major university back then, and I remember the year, I think it was 2008 or 2009, when Facebook opened up to faculty and staff at major universities, as well as students. And then a couple of years later, of course, it opened up to everyone. But have you been able to pinpoint a year or an event when Facebook changed from this glorious thing that was supposed to bring the world together in peace and harmony, and then suddenly, you know, Zuckerberg's creation became Zuckerberg's monster, like the Frankenstein monster, and it was... You know, it's going through the village and killing the villagers, and that's not what was intended.
All right, Randall, thank you for your question. Facebook is kind of mild compared to everything else, I think. But go ahead, doctor.
No, thank you, Randall, for that question. And hey, he's absolutely spot on everything. It started in the mid-2000s, heavily associated with college students and especially Facebook, like Randall said. But really, when Facebook opened to the general public over the next several years, it was still somewhat benign. What I think the quick answer to what Randall is asking is it was with the rise of smartphones and being able to access social media 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter where you are.
And just not being able to get away from it. It's constantly with you.
That's right.
And even when it's not on, you're not watching it, you have your phone with you. And I think that might have some residual effects.
Absolutely. I mean, I you know, catch myself. Well, I'll be at dinner or watching TV and just like almost like a muscle memory, just check for my phone and see if I have anything. I don't want to be doing that, but I, you know, it's like just doing it and I'll catch myself and not do it. But, you know, this affects relationships as well. I think it would be incredibly hard to be a teenager these days.
Oh, yeah.
When we were growing up, you know, I could do something stupid and no one will see it. Or after baseball practice, I would go home and, you know, watch 21 Jump Street with my mom and be in my jammies. You can't really do that anymore. I mean, you have to be on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and have that pressure to you know, be there.
You know, I find that when I leave my cell phone in another room and then when I go to sleep at night, I have a better sleep. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And honestly, that if your listeners could take one thing away from this conversation, it is that sleep is as basic as it sounds. Sleep is restorative and incredibly important. And the one thing that social media and smartphones have interrupted more than anything else is sleep. And so if we could just do one thing, it would be exactly what you said, is put your phone somewhere else and have a good night's sleep.
Let's go to another caller. We have Tom, and Tom, you're on The Source with Jeff Temple. Go ahead.
Hey, Jeff, I had a question. My wife has become addicted to Instagram, and she spends, you know, way too many hours and time, you know, just watching, you know, nonsensical kind of things. And it's quite honestly, it's obnoxious, you know, having to be around her when she's doing that. And really, all I can do is, you know, is shame her. And I'm wondering if you have a better suggestion.
All right, Tom, good luck with that. And so, Jeff, what do you got?
Yeah, I think it's a tendency to shame the person. And unfortunately, that usually takes the opposite effect and doesn't really work. So, you know, maybe focusing less on telling his wife that, and I empathize with his predicament, but less on you're addicted to Instagram and more on what the behavior is doing to their relationship. So, you know, don't make Instagram the enemy and don't make your wife the problem. Talk about what you're missing, Tom, in the relationship and agree on some boundaries together. So the goal isn't to like win an argument about screen time, because I assume Tom already had realized that doesn't work, as have I realized that doesn't work with my wife. The goal is to get some of our relationship back.
Can we explain to people that this is having is weighing on them, on their mental health, and that they would be better off taking a break?
Just in my experience, that doesn't totally work with folks. But I think more talking about how it's affecting you and how it's affecting the relationship, and you know, hopefully that they'll come to that on their own. I think it does bring a really important point that relationships have changed and this has gotten in the way. I mean, I'm sure all of our listeners have been out at a restaurant and seen other folks just not talk to each other and be on their phone the whole time. You know, we don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're organizing babysitters so they can have fun later that night. But, you know, maybe they're not focused on their on the present moment. And that is frustrating. And I think that, you know, it is something that we are allowed to be concerned about.
Let's go to another caller. We have Robert. And Robert, you're on The Source.
Thank you for having me on the air. Jeff, I have a question for you. Now, I think the real study here is the parents. The parents are the generation that brought these kids into this technology, because the parents were born into this technology. So I think the real study, what you should be talking about, is how are we going to control, what are we going to teach our parents to tell our children what they should be doing with social media? Because simply, you could sit up in the air and talk about all these fancy things and it sounds really snazzy, but you're not saying anything. You're only talking about great ideas, great thoughts, in the perfect world it works that way, but in the real world, start with the parents. The parents are the ones that need to be taught, because the parents are the ones that were born into the technology. And their children were brought into the technology. So simply, we could sit there and waste all the time we want, But the truth is, it's out of control. And until you hit the source of the cancer, which would be the parents, and start with them instead of worrying and starting with the children of the effect of who started this.
All right, Robert, thank you for that. So now we're in multi-generation of people who are digital natives. Does that make a difference?
Robert brings up a great point, you know, that a couple things. Like, I did not grow up with technology, and I'm still a bad model to my kids. I think we're all bad. It crosses all lifespans and developmental ages and everything else. But it's really important if we're telling kids, or in this case with my study, young adults, if we're trying to tell them, you know, spend less time on the phone while we're on the phone all the time and modeling that behavior, what we say is not going to translate doing. So that's a really good point. But I'll also say that, you know, parents may have introduced their kids to technology, but they didn't design the technology to be hard to put down. So I think the more useful question now is whether it's interfering with kids' sleep, their relationships, their mood, their daily functioning. And that's what that should be where we approach kids and parents, to be quite honest, and model that behavior for our kids.
We do see little children being given these devices as digital pacifiers. Is that something to be concerned about?
Yeah, it's to a certain extent. We don't want these screens to babysit their kids. But I'm very careful to say that we shouldn't scold parents. For instance, parents are extremely busy and that they want 30 minutes to themselves. And if it takes a screen for 30 minutes, then that's also okay. Parents shouldn't feel guilty about that. Now, if that being said, if that's all they're doing every day, and that's not okay. And in fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics suggests that, you know, young kids should have no screen time except for talking to relatives. So there are some limits, but I'm careful to not chastise parents for wanting a 30-minute break.
So what do you want people to do with this information from your study, finding that 6 hours plus a day looking at social media causes anxiety, suicidal ideation? What do we need to know about that?
I think that there is responsibility, and I'm going back to the callers, at multiple levels. You know, we shouldn't put the entire burden on 15 or 20-year-olds to resist the platforms that are deliberately designed to capture their attention. And we shouldn't put all the onus on the parents at all either. I think we need to talk a lot about teaching kids self-control, but we should also talk about the environments we're asking them to exercise self-control in. And there's going to be other things that happen over the next several decades. There's going to be new inventions. Maybe there'll be holograms or something I think it's less about trying to police the new technology and more about teaching kids healthy relationships and boundaries and communication. And that way they can adjust to whatever new thing comes into the world, like AI, which I'll say that this generation of kids is handling AI a heck of a lot better than some adults.
All right. Well, I think people, especially kids, they need real accomplishments. They need to actually do something that is real, that is that they can be proud of, that shows them, teaches them that they are strong and that they can do great things. And I think that when they're on social media all the time, they are deprived of that experience. But Jeff Temple, you're the expert. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, thanks, David, for having me, and Viva San Antonio.
Viva San Antonio. And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.